Did you hear something? Contact. I just heard like a farting sound.
Okay. It's pretty normal.
Again, your cave.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hello.
Hey, everyone.
Hello. I learned, and I was looking up elegant, beautiful formulas. Elegant, beautiful science.
Okay.
And first of all, if your name isn't Einstein or Euler, you're pretty much not on that list. I mean,
there in terms of your contributions to elegant and beautiful formulas.
Yes. And I'm exaggerating, but Euler, holy cow, this guy, like everything you can think of in geometry and mathematics, he seems to have already discovered.
He had thoughts.
How would you describe a beautiful formula? Is it in the simplicity of it? Is it in the way of effect?
Pythagoras' theorem is a beautiful formula. Reveals a hidden depth about a triangle.
It has some symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And it has real world implications.
Yes.
But among them that I found was one that I thought was particularly hilarious and lovely, which is that 0.999999 infinitum equals one.
Well, because you always have to round up.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I'm not sure I can speak from a mathematician standpoint about this formula, but apparently that's true. 0.99 infinite series of nines equals one.
And I think it says more, maybe that says more about a way we do math than it does what those numbers mean or something about infinity. I don't know.
This reminds me a lot of those conversations you have is like when you right. take
have you ever
physics.
Really is, looked is, at your hand?
Is your green the same as my green?
Or like what if it's all the matrix? What if Avogadro's number was off by one? You know, and you get to the Planck constant, like our universe exists as it is because the Planck constant is the Planck constant.
Right.
Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe we don't know. Maybe the Planck constant is why I don't know.
Okay.
So uncertain.
Whoa. I don't want to dive into this just yet. This is a bookmark for a later podcast because Norm still has to get up to speed.
Oh, we should make this an ultimatum and a book.
Yeah, we should give mandate. people the,
oh,
yeah,
let's
give
do
them
it.
The word.
Let's do
the
it.
The three body problem. You mentioned it last week on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I went and bought it at the bookstore in the airport on my way to Los Angeles mm-hmm. last week. I plowed through it. It is phenomenal.
It's what I wanted Ready Player One to be.
This is a deep science fiction. It's Chinese. It's translated. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to get to know about Chinese culture that is footnoted mm-hmm. in the book.
I didn't understand what the implications of the Cultural Revolution were, and this gave me enough to start to know that I should go first dig into Wikipedia, and now I'm probably going to go read some more books. Actually, as a result.
And there are some bits in it. Like there's a bit early on where something, I'm not just no spoilers or anything. I'm just talking the most general terms. When something happens and you're like, how is that possible? And then they explain how it's possible. And I have not been able to stop thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. We live in a world of magic and wonder, Adam.
So let's say not next week because you're gone next week.
It's a pretty good book. It's a pretty long book.
The week after. Is we'll do a book review, spoiler cast book discussion on the three body problems.
That's the 22nd, I believe.
Yes.
It's a
that's right. 23rd. Yeah.
Lucy Shen, I think is right. I don't know. Nobody corrected my pronunciation last time. So I assume
the three body problem.
And it's the first in a series. I haven't read the second one. It may go to hell. And the third one comes out this August.
This is very exciting to me to discover that it was the first book of a trilogy because as soon as I finished it, I wanted more.
I don't know that I think I might be okay, but I'll read the next one.
No, it stands alone.
Yeah.
It totally stands alone. It's a remarkable piece of science fiction. It's a remarkable piece of fiction. And so it deals with some of the social, science fiction often does this, but it
good science fiction.
The social dynamics and interpersonal dynamics are really quite compelling and some of them don't have anything to do with science fiction itself. It's just, it's a very rounded world.
And relatable in today's political climate.
Relatable in today's political climate. And a glimpse of the political climate from China, which is so different than ours. They've gone through completely, you know how it's like every now and then you're talking to a European and they bring up World War II, and eventually the conversation has to come around to the fact that Americans have no idea what it was like to have a war on our soil. We haven't had a city over there destroyed or a church over there.
Or been on rations for 15 years.
Or been on, exactly. Yeah. So there's China, like, again, completely different experience of the last couple of millennia than we did.
Well, and even more recently, they went through an entire, like, they know what the current right war on science, like, they saw the much amplified and much, much worse version of that in the, I guess, 50s and 60s.
During the Cultural Revolution
and have since come out the other side because they realized down that path lies ruin.
Right. It's that glimpse is really one of the, as far as science fiction is always supposed to give you a glimpse of something that you would have never imagined. Yeah. Just China as a subject in this book is a pretty remarkable reality. I was unfamiliar with.
Okay. You know, it's another remarkable reality, science fiction. Ooh. That apparently exists.
Segway.
Oh, is there a signal? Signal.
It's a light starts flashing when it's time for Norm to segue.
It's the sentiment that the Earth is flat, which apparently people still believe.
Wait, what?
There is a flat Earther society.
Well, but there's people who don't believe that vaccines cause autism, and that chemtrails are controlling us all.
Right.
Yes.
Both of those are harder to prove.
Yes. But
maybe, I don't know.
And it totally agree that, you know, there are groups of people who are very, very adamant in their belief of a certain thing and for whatever reason or not. But to believe with conviction and not just as a troll that the Earth is flat, I couldn't wrap my head around that. And there are maps that the Flat Earth Society has drawn up. Do you know why this is coming up?
No, I have no idea why this is coming up.
So Neil deGrasse Tyson got into a public Twitter feud with, I believe, a musician, a rapper.
A rapper whose name is?
I forget. But,
hold on, I got to look this up.
Yes, but I think in a song saying that Earth is flat.
This was the diss track, Neil deGrasse Tyson thing.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And I guess it's been understood that, you know, there are organizations who may have these beliefs, and to me, it just sounds like it's a farce. Like they're doing it purely as a trolling.
Like all you need to do to prove that the world is round is have a well and a sunny day, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There's some very basic
technically
science.
Two wells.
Okay. Like, yeah. Two wells. And a cell phone.
And so I tried to understand, like, what is their perception of the geography
B-O-B.
Of the world?
Okay.
B-O-B. Is the name of the rapper. B period O period B period. But also, it turns out Tia Tequila also believes the Earth is flat.
I have less.
These are people from, okay.
Less stake in what she says.
My experience has intersected with theirs in a meaningful way.
Now, association wise, like, I'm not going to, like, demean them based on, like, who they associate with, but
no.
Like, just on the belief itself, I just want to come to an understanding of what. And so I looked up.
So what's
some
the
maps.
Argument? Yeah, I'm interested.
And like, map?
And there are pictures like, hey, that's
Tony.
If you flatten the
disc world
and you have just a disc, that's not a real. There's no belief system.
Wait a second. Hold on.
That's just taking, like, a picture of a globe, a 2D picture, and cutting it out the stencil.
Wow. How do they deal with the Bering Strait?
It's this is the one. There's a, if you it's in a on Wikipedia Commons, the square and stationary Earth, where the Earth is flat but is also, I'm going to blow this up.
I have a hard time with
the
this.
The Earth is flat but it's bowl shaped.
But it's bowl shaped and it bulges in a way which explains for them
some of the curvature.
Some of the curvature.
See? Oh boy.
Wow.
I mean, this is like the pre-Copernican idea that the Earth was at the center of the world and we had all these different concentric rings that things rotated on to explain astronomy. You can explain anything, but I mean, we have people that are literally able to see the roundness of the Earth. We've sent people,
I have seen it.
Yeah, you've seen it. We've sent people far enough away that they can see the entirety of the Earth.
Yeah.
So this happened in late January, and their arguments range from, only NASA has provided photos or you use lenses. How come
I can see this city that's 35 miles away, but it's not interrupted by the curvature of the Earth?
How come?
Sent repeated tweets to Neil deGrasse Tyson with his supposed boom, like, I'm busting your reality wide open, and it's frankly, it made me sad.
So yeah, this escalated to a point where Neil deGrasse Tyson, he has nephew, wrote a counter rap, and Tyson dropped his own track called Flat to Fact. And I believe he performed this on a late night show.
He did. He finished. This is the one where he finishes by dropping.
And he drops the mic.
It was like a $600 mic, right? It was a really, I know about this. It was a really expensive microphone. I happened to be on blogs talking about recent destruction of invaluable or priceless instruments.
So the part of the story you know is about how expensive this mic.
We'll talk about that later. Or maybe
Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sad.
We'll
talk about that.
Yes, but there's also another story to this. Is because I was talking with Kishore Hari, who's our science correspondent, and he's a science educator, and he said, totally agree that, you know, it's kind of wild and inconceivable that there's societies that believe this proven scientific fact, but the way Neil deGrasse Tyson went about it to make it almost like a shaming to have the mic drop, he felt that that was too much.
Well, shaming is never the right answer, right?
I totally agree with that. I don't think it's the right answer. When I hear that someone believes that, but I think it's too easy for us to go, what an idiot, and then just sort of high-five each other.
And so that's the discussion I wanted to bring about.
Okay, like, I think it's a really reasonable discussion, because my first place my brain goes is, what is the human need to believe that you understand something that no one else can see? It is the same driver of conspiracy theorists. Chemtrails, the Kennedy assassination, the moon landing.
The Kennedy thing's totally I've been there. That's a hell of a shot.
There is a human need. It is the same, I think, personally, that it has a similar impetus as people believing that the world's about to end. We want to believe that famous, what do you call it, wish that you can give to someone, may you live in interesting times, right? I think that the
50 to 100 years that we occupy is a really special significance in the history of not only mankind, but of Earth and the universe on a cosmic scale.
I mean, if you look at
the
technological pace of growth, of our people, the 50 to 100 most recent years are almost certainly, except for a few hundred years in the Dark Ages, the most interesting time to live.
And if you are on the southern side of the Mediterranean during the quote unquote Dark Ages, things were going really well.
Right. And the alternative for that is that if you don't live in interesting times, quote unquote, is that you are insignificant. The reality
you have to confront the fact that you're insignificant.
And
let's be clear.
That is scary.
We are insignificant.
Right.
All of us.
We are, as Tim Minchin says, insignificant specks of carbon.
Well, and that kind of goes against the genetic code that we have to procreate and of survival.
Yeah, it's that there are no animal conspiracy theorists. It is a result of our sentience, and I think it's a construction. I don't know, but you think
I think raccoons maybe.
The trash pandas
are the conspiracy theorists of the animal kingdom.
I mean, they look a little shady.
They're all like, this is the...
Man, I think they put these compost bins out here just to ice us.
Actually, I was doing it in Dan Aykroyd's voice, because Dan Aykroyd is always the ultimate conspiracy theorist from Sneakers.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, too many... what is...
too many secrets.
What's the word? Cosmodrome... What is it before they figure out the anagram?
Oh, that it's too many secrets? Yeah. God, I can't remember.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Ryan Seacrest.
Seacrest out. I mean, I think you're right. I think that the core of it, though, is that it's really hard to cope with the fact that you are one of an impossibly large number of people that are walking in the face of the planet. No matter how large your impact, unless you're one of a few dozen people, it's almost impossible to make a measurable impact on what we've done. And that's how we get into all the trouble we get into as a species, too.
I think that if you could also crack open the brain of, like, the Koch brothers and those people who are funding the denial of climate change and climate science, you might find in some of them a feeling of, like, damn straight we are changing the world. That is power. I once knew someone who thought it was a braggable thing that in Manhattan trees only grow where humans say they grow. Like that was a triumph.
Well, that's the way we approached engineering and civic engineering for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
Till like 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's right? Remarkable, but it's not necessarily a triumph.
Right. I agree.
It's
But going back to why people believe these things and their need to believe in the conspiracy theory and need to believe in only the things they see is because you can't comprehend the bigger world and the bigger context is kind of scary. All these things that you can't see. Right. And so there was a phone. You have a poster, I think, in the cave about, isn't it about argumentation?
It's all the cognitive biases.
Cognitive biases. And a lot of these fall under cognitive biases, mm-hmm. right? And it's tough to step out of that. If you look at the list, there's so many that you can look at and say, wow.
I can't read more than 10 of them before I'm so depressed. I have to move on.
Right.
Well, but the idea of a cognitive
bias. Cognitive bias is all the ways in which we fool ourselves. We have confirmation bias. We have the fallacy of false equivalence. We have all these ways in which we can get in the way of our own understanding of things because of the way we expect them to be.
A lot of it's stuff that before I knew about cognitive bias, built into, hey, this is the stuff that you can rationalize away, right?
Right.
And it's the techniques that you use to do that in a lot of cases. It's interesting because when you know what they are, that along with a decent, healthy sense of empathy lets you understand the world around you better than anything else you can do, I think.
Right.
But it's still uphill. You have to fight it every time.
You have to fight it every single time. Yeah. Every scientist worth their salt fights it constantly. There's a great bit in Hadfield's book, An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth, where he's in a NASA meeting. They're going over a test that they'd done. And Chris said, I think that the result of the next one is going to be blah, blah, blah. He had something to say about the next test. And everyone kind of was like, okay, cool. And then somebody in the meeting said, don't be swayed by Chris's level of intelligence and his authority. Let's, make sure you test it yourself.
Yeah.
And Chris was a little bit pissed off. But he heard this and he realized, no, this is the deepest scientific way of approaching the thing. He does carry a tremendous amount of authority with what he says, and that shouldn't sway you.
If you want to see a perfect example of this, play a game like Werewolf or The Resistance or Secret Hitler or one of they're basically party games about figuring out the state of a room based on imperfect knowledge. And I played one of these games a few weeks ago. I made an assumption based on the fact that two people seemed to be working together, which indicated that they had knowledge the rest of the room wouldn't, which then made me think, oh, they're the bad guys. And I wasn't able to let go of it.
Yeah.
And I completely fucked up the entire game for everybody playing in the most spectacular way possible.
Oh, wow.
Because I had made this one early assumption in the first like 2 or 3 minutes of an hour long game. And it's still fun as a result of like that's the way the game works, right?
Yeah.
But it's a perfect illustration of that kind of those core
how that can get in your way.
And there's nothing stronger than your own sense of conviction.
Yeah,
and that was the premise.
It shows I know that there's been studies that when you try and give someone logical arguments against their conviction, it often makes them dig in.
Well, any
of us need to do is look inside our own relationships to see the points at which we've dug into things that were dumb because we
it was interesting because that initial assumption put me in a position where any positive or negative feedback from those two people that I had fingered as the bad guys
was going to confirm
my initial error.
Because
either they're playing well or they're playing badly, and either one I'm going to keep thinking that my initial aha was correct.
I mean, this is the kind of critical thinking that you hope you get taught in school, the cognitive biases, but it really isn't part of curriculum.
No.
Well, the curriculum's about memorizing things and learning how to do basic math.
And let's go back. Let's pull back one more notch to the shaming thing, because this is when you're shaming someone for a belief that is inarguably dumb, you aren't helping them or you're not helping people who believe what they believe or people who believe what you believe. You're not necessarily good. It's not the place. All you have to do is read a Reddit thread to see how toxic that can be. And I'm sorry for singling out Reddit. Any comment section of any website.
It's the arguments of having a message boards since the dawn of the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. It gets people more entrenched. We should see those opportunities. Like, it's an easy lesson to think about. If you hear something that's so fantastical, you can't believe it. You want empathy, part one. And then two, it's an opportunity to educate or learn yourself.
That said, there are things that are so spectacularly dangerous based on this type of knowledge. Like the vaccine thing is a situation where the fact that we've let a couple of people with really unbelievably misguided opinions and some large voices damage herd immunity for massive swaths of population in North America is insane.
It is insane.
And it's something that, I mean, that's when legislation.
And I agree.
Which ended up happening.
California recently passed a law stating that kids can't attend school unless they've been vaccinated. Yeah,
you're not allowed to take part of public school unless you've been vaccinated.
And I think that's great. Right. I think that's absolutely right.
Fewer mic drops. I think the mic drop itself is kind of...
It's fun, but it's
for impact.
Right.
That's the definition. It says in that action, I've had enough. I think I've done my part.
I'm pretty clear that I've totally wiped the floor with you.
Right.
See you later.
Right. See you later.
It's a coda on the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I think all three of us are agreed that this is we are asking for an olive branch to civil discussion.
Empathy is better than not having empathy.
Totally.
Like, have empathy for the other people, even if they're saying something that is on the face in unimaginably dumb.
As Bugs Bunny said about the witch, she might not be pretty now, but she was someone's baby once. So you can remember that about Chancellor Trump.
Wow. That's a random thing to pull out of your hat. Bugs Bunny quote.
Right. Donald Trump, I think we've wrapped it up.
Don't drop those expensive mics in the Earth's
round.
Don't
drop the expensive mics.
See you guys next week.
Thanks guys. Bye.
You have the prima fart nay.
Prima fart nay.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like Braveheart.
No.
Brave fart?
Brave fart.
All right, lead us in, Will.